how Verona shocked the world with their Serie A Scudetto win back in 1984-85. With me here in London in the studio, it's Emmett Gates and Dan Canciano, the Destination Calcio senior writers, and we're going to have a look into an article that Dan's put out this week on destinationcalcio.com on Verona's epic rise under the coach Osvaldo Bagnoli and some of the gems in that side. And also, we're going to compare to the closest thing today, some kind of analogy where we can say, you know what, that Verona side, they were able to win the Scudetto as underdogs. No one saw it coming. What team is there in this day and age? And we're going to go straight into it. Dan, you wrote this piece, extraordinary. And we thank you for doing it. It is a pleasure to read. Tell us a little bit about why you wanted to write this. What really caught your eye?
I wanted to write this for, okay, it's a very roundabout reason that I wanted to write this. When I was young, my dad had then my kid from 1986 World Cup. And the reason why he bought that is because he'd fallen in love with Preben Larsen Elkjær, who was the spearhead of Verona title season.
Danish.
And he always banged on about Danish dynamite, this, that, and the other. And then I remember he pointed out on a sticker album, and his name just, for some reason, just stuck in my head. And then obviously, you know, growing up, you read about Verona. And I think that this is probably the last football fairy tales. I often say that we are no longer allowed fairy tales in football. You can't have a fairy tale these days. It's just money plays too much of a part.
Well, you've written also about maybe some comparisons to those fairy tales. We'll get into that a little bit later. But
yesterday was the 40th anniversary of Verona winning the title. Now, just to set the table for viewers and listeners who may not be too familiar with Serie A, teams like Verona do not win Serie A. They are not supposed to be winning league titles. Veneto, the region where Verona is in, had never had a title winner, and they haven't had since. Verona are the first team outside the original capital to win the league since Provercelli did it in the 1920s. So
it's an exclusive group. Exclusivity here. Yeah.
So in Italy, effectively you win the league if you come from one of the big, the big area where football is just a tradition.
The Turins, the
yeah,
Romes,
the Turins,
Milans,
Rome, Milan.
Genoa even, sometimes.
Even Rome, you know, Lazio and Roma winning a couple of titles each, so it's not exactly a football hotbed. It is a football hotbed in terms of passion, in terms of size of the clubs, but not in terms of success.
And to put it into context here, previous to Verona winning this, even other cities such as Cagliari had won a Serie A title, but Verona never. Yeah. And in such I don't want to say, it's an industrial sort of economic bomb up in that northern Italian region, all across there. They've got that belt and there's lots of money, but still Verona could never quite get there. And it was a time before the Bosman ruling where Italy had 8 homegrown players per team. And then in 1982, was it, Dan?
Yeah.
That they started
introducing foreign players. Now, the fact that they introduced the foreign players, though, was still limited. You could have 2 foreign players per team. And this led to arguably the most evenly distributed amount of talent the Serie A has probably ever seen. So in the summer of 1984, you had the likes of Karl-Heinz Rummenigge joining Inter Milan, Socrates joining Fiorentina, Junior joining Torino, Ray Wilkins and Mark Napoli.
Emmett had a few names before, he was telling me. Was it the great, you got a tattoo of him?
Yeah, Diego joined Napoli.
And made his debut against Verona as well.
Yeah, exactly, a 3-1 loss, where I think he kind of realised the style of Italian football is a lot different where he had just come from, La Liga.
Yeah, Barcelona he turned up from. And he would have, thinking, well, I'm going to debut against Verona. This is not going to be that hard. Went up there, copped a 3-1 beating.
Yeah.
And then Verona just set that tone for the whole season.
And, you know, Verona had, they made 2 signings on their own. They signed Hans-Peter Briegel, who was a West German international. He was instrumental in them reaching the 1982 World Cup final, which they obviously lost to Italy, and then the Euros final 2 years later. And then they signed Elkjær, who was an up-and-coming striker, but he played for Lokeren in Belgium. So, you know, they were pretty much, very much banking on talent. They weren't buying a ready-made star. And the two of them became so crucial to Verona that Elkjær was nicknamed the mayor by Verona fans, because it became an institution in the city, very much so. And, you know, they were I would say there were statement signings, but there were still workmanlike blue-collar signings. There weren't your Maradonas, your Platini, your Zicos and whatnot. And that suited Verona just fine because Osvaldo Bagnoli was the manager. And it was very much a sort of, not a flashy kind of manager, very much workmanlike, blue-collar attitude.
And he brought them up from Serie B.
He brought them up from Serie B.
That.
Yeah, he brought them from Serie B. He made them, he took them to the Coppa Italia final twice, in 83 and 84. They lost both. And then they made the UEFA Cup final. The UEFA Cup. They qualified for the UEFA Cup the season before they won the Scudetto. And this was a time when Italian football was very much not still wedded to Catenaccio, but it was very defensive.
There was still Catenaccio there. Yeah. And they had that zona mista technique where it was kind of positional play, I guess.
It
Pep
was.
As Guardiola's fed off that, and same with Spalletti and that, and then as football progressed and evolved. But back then, it was so tactical, and a lot of the players, even today, but especially back then.
And it was pre-Sacchi. Obviously, Sacchi didn't come to Milan until
1987.
Yeah. And then he shifted the paradigm in Italy. But
that shows you the levels of coaching, because back then we had such depth with the Italian coaches that Sacchi was coaching Serie C.
Yeah.
And winning trophies as well. So
what Bagnoli did was basically he assembled a squad of not necessarily S beings, but sort of players that didn't necessarily command interest from other clubs. You had the likes of, Pietro Fanna, Giuseppe Galderisi, who had been a Juventus in Galderisi's case, and never quite worked out for him, so moved on, the likes of Roberto Tricella as well, players who had been at bigger clubs. Things hadn't quite worked out for them, and Bagnoli thought there was an opportunity for them to actually fit within his system. It was very much a case of having the right players to fit his system rather than building a system to the players you already had. And his system was incredibly simple. It basically consisted of defending well and adapting to the weaknesses of the opposition. So you will have Verona taking teams on the counter, which was unheard of in Italy at the time, but it worked. Verona conceded, I think they conceded only 16 or 19 goals in 30 matches.
19 overall, 19, scored 42, plus 23 goal difference, which...
So, Galderese was the top scorer with 11 goals, which is not exactly...
Was he joint with LK?
LK, yeah.
11 in the league, I think, both of them had.
Torino finishing second that year, so...
Yeah, under Radice, that would have been a story in itself, because Radice steered them to the Scudetto in 1976, their only post-Superga crash Scudetto. But there was nothing revolutionary about Bagnoli's approach, and yet there was a lot of it that sort of upset the status quo, because the bigger clubs could not compete with Verona. And they started slow and they started getting results together, and by the time that I would say the club started taking them seriously, it was too late, because they had a momentum of their own.
Well, they've got that's a 5-10, probably a 13 game undefeated streak before they lost their first game to Avellino, of all clubs.
In a snowstorm, there was the final game of the Girone d'Andata, as Italians described the first half of the season. And then Verona went through a rough spell in winter. I think they won only once in four games. And then they got back to form to the point where he kept repeating, we're only here to avoid relegation. And he got to a point where even he, after they drew against Juventus in Turin, he had to admit, we are title challengers. You could no longer hide behind the avoiding relegation line, which was nonsensical anyway, because as we said earlier, Verona had been relatively successful under him in the past two seasons. And by then, it was very much a case of other teams taking points off each other, because you had Inter mounting a run, then you had Sampdoria, then you had Juventus rallying briefly, Torino.
And back then, 2 points for a win.
Yeah, exactly.
So one for a draw.
Made it very hard for other teams to sort of close the gap. And it was just a case of other clubs taking points off each other.
And we go through that starting 11 that everyone sort of remembers. Manager, obviously, Bagnoli, we put a tweet up here. Garella in goals, Tricella, Fontolan, Ferroni, Marangon, Brigel, we're talking Di Gennaro, Volpati, Fanna, Galderisi, El Kaya, and some of these players were sort of in and around that Italian Azzurro setup as well. So
in 1986 mostly, yeah.
And these are the levels that Bagnoli was able to cultivate.
Yeah.
get these players to that level and bring the best out of them. That's probably what he did with some of the players he recycled from Juventus.
Very much a case of the players who play their best football under him will never go on and play any better football than they did under Bagnoli. So it was very, very much a perfect storm. You know, he got the best out of his players, and his players, I don't want to say allowed him to get the best out of them, but it was definitely a sort of, you know, a kind of, they were in such a perfect sync for that one season where, you know, whatever they tried to do worked brilliantly for them.
And they were a very physical team too. Obviously, Elkjær was tall, Brigel was tall. They were very good from set pieces. And obviously, Serie A was physical at the time, but I think having that extra element of physicality, the height, you know, danger from corners, free kicks, it helped. It was instrumental in pushing Verona forward, and it offered something different.
Yeah, just on the physicality side of it, Elkjær got a famous goal against Juventus in which he sent through, there's basically just a typical counter-attack move which consisted of a defender lumping the ball forward to him. And as he's running, Stefano Pioli, who the former Milan manager, tries to tackle him but only managed to knock his boot off, and Elkjær just kept running without breaking stride and then checked inside and killed the ball past the corner and scored. And the goal became almost, you know, it became a cult hero even more because of this goal, and the goal is sort of like assumed mythical status almost immediately. And when he was asked about it in the interview after the game, he just couldn't see what was so extraordinary about it. He basically said, I'm a striker, I'm paid to score goals, whether I have a boot on or not.
The one boot assassin.
Yeah. And then only 20 years later, after he watched a replay of it, I mean, I assume he would have watched a replay long before that, but when Verona celebrated the 30th anniversary of the title, he was asked about it again, and he was like, actually, now I do realise why it seems so odd. It's just...
He stepped away from it. He was
like, you know, he couldn't understand what was so extraordinary about it. It's a bizarre goal to see now. I mean, I suppose boots these days aren't designed to fly off at the first sign of contact.
Well, it was a unique story that season, so it's a unique part
it
of
is,
that story.
Exactly.
A unique moment you've got in your piece here that Bagnoli even said after the draw against Juventus, he said that it was a year-long adventure built on special moments. And that's how they got there.
Yeah.
I mean, you lose twice. It's a fairy tale season.
And I think in every season, whoever wins the league, there's always watershed moments or hallmark moments, something that transforms the season or stands out the most. And Elkjær scoring with one boot is definitely up there.
I think we should mention the fact that also back then the season was only contested with 30 games rather than 38.
Sure.
So there is an element of... Perhaps having a shorter season helped Verona insofar that it limited the amount of time the other teams had to catch up to them. But at the same time, when you look at it, they didn't play a single team that would be a gimme, you know, so to speak. They had the likes of Inter Milan at close to their peak, AC Milan. They had the likes of, you know, as you said earlier, Juventus. And
Sampdoria were very strong.
Sampdoria were very strong. Juventus.
Torino were super strong that season.
Roma were only 2 years removed from winning the league and finishing second to Juventus the previous season. Obviously, there is an element of sort of surprise, but I think the thing about Verona is that, you know, when you normally hear stories about this sort of one-off achievements, it's always like a motley crew of players, or, you know, there is a backstory of something has gone wrong at some point. There was nothing wrong with Verona. It was just a case of, you know, the right manager getting the right place in at the right time and just, seizing on their strengths and maximising their strengths, I suppose.
Emmett, do you think the 8 homegrown player thing would have helped smaller clubs like Verona back then? Because we see now that it's unlimited, the amount of sort of non-Italian players you can have in a side, and therefore it's kind of like the levels... the gap has widened for the smaller clubs to win now. It's unheard of almost. Even Napoli's fairy tale win in 2023, like no one expected it, no one saw it coming. It's always the big three and maybe one anomaly here and there, like we saw with Roma and Lazio. Until Napoli won, there was no other side other than the big three that had won since 2001.
Yeah, Roma won it in 2001.
So it was 22 years. Back then, though, there seemed to be more winners in Serie A. Roma, as you said, 2 years away from winning the Scudetto. Napoli won their first in history in 86-87.
2 years after Roma,
So do you think that 8 homegrown native Italians leveled the playing field. Also, the level, the depth of Italian players back then, there seemed to be a lot more than now. So it was almost a case of find the best 14 Italian players that you could get to your club. And then the cherries on the cake, on the torta, were the the cannoli cream in. Was just the sweetness was getting a Maradona, or in this case, an Elkaia or a Brigel.
Yeah, I think it's a two-pronged answer. I think the financial disparity wasn't as big then as it is now. Yes, Italy had a lot of money at the time. It was the richest and best league in the world. But I think there was scope for Verona to kind of try and push for Scudetto. Obviously, we'd seen Roma, you know, and Torino finish second that season. So I don't think that the financial gap is as big as it is now. But I also then, to the second part, I think you're right in that you have an Italian core. It, not to sound like a cliche, but it means more because they're from Italy. They know what Verona represents. Whereas now you've...
More loyalty?
Yeah, in a sense, more loyalty. And
stick with the project for a longer period.
Exactly. Whereas you get certain foreign players that come, and it's only natural if you come from other countries, you don't know maybe what the club means or the
history. What it means to the fans.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I think having more Italians, obviously because it was law then, you could only have two foreign players. So I do think there is an element of that as well, in that it meant more. But also the fact that the financial gap wasn't as big as it is today.
And also I think with the on-ground players rule, they did not allow for bigger clubs, which is the way back then, to hoard talent, as we've been seeing. It's effectively since the Bosman ruling has come in, because
we saw Inter do that with so many strikers in the late 90s.
You see teams doing that across Europe, whether it's Bayern Munich or Liverpool's.
You get that player just so that your opposition couldn't have them.
Effectively,
obviously, just rotate them in.
Teams will say that it's because there is a lot more games that they play these days, and which there is a degree of truth to that, but it's largely a case of,
But when it first started, it wasn't the way.
So you can't have it. And, Verona just 17 players in their Scudetto season.
And at the back, they had Claudio Garella, who was there for that season. He left after that to join Napoli. But he was there for 4 or 5 years. And having a keeper that is reliable in goal helped Bagnoli obviously get up from Serie B, part of that journey. And I guess if you want to equate it to something nowadays, maybe Sassuolo coming up from Serie B and then going beyond being part of the Seven Sisters and making UEFA competition, but them to actually shock the world and win a Serie A.
I think, I think it's probably like Parma
in the 90s.
Coming close. Well, they deserved that 96.
Yeah,
Scudetto, let's
but
be
then
honest.
You look at the way their success was built on and, financial quicksand. We all know what happened to Parma afterwards. So that, which is, I'm not, takes nothing away for the players and the managers, at Parma.
Well, Lazio as well.
Yeah, Lazio as well. I think there was
Fiorentina, Roma to an extent.
Verona's probably
Napoli, the hangover after winning. Yeah.
I think Verona probably you could compare them to maaybe Nottingham Forest from the Brian Clough.
Okay.
Came up from second division, won the league, won the European Cups twice.
That's a good one, yeah.
And again, there were similarities between Clough and Bagnoli in the sense that, they both were determined that a squad should have a strong spine. So you mentioned Garella had been there for 5 years. Bagnoli was an assistant and the squad will have to have like a strong keeper, strong centre-back, strong centre midfielders and a striker, able to score as much as he was able to graft out for the team.
And they got in Brigel, who was a Euros winner in 1980. Yeah. So he had that experience behind him. Yeah. So to bring in someone of that calibre at Verona, it's who would you equate that to now with Verona trying to bring in maybe Tony Cruz in his pomp.
Yeah, I mean, it would be there. It would have actually be there. It would be like a Fiorentina signing Tony Cruz in his pomp or a Sassuolo signing Bastian Schweinsteiger.
I guess if you're going to compare levels, Fiorentina are higher up the table. They're a bigger club at the moment. Yeah. And Fiorentina signing Tony Cruz in his heyday, which we probably would have seen if we rewound time 20 years ago, because that was the strength of Serie A, but not nowadays. So other players in that side, Di Gennaro, 15 times capped for Italy, four goals at the international level, and he was part of that side in
probably
midfield.
Probably one of the most, not underrated, but maybe misunderstood players of that time in Italy. It was never... never quite hit the eyes for Italy. That a lot
tough time after winning the 82 World Cup, though. And he was in Serie B when they won that 82 World Cup.
And then you know the transition from 82 to 86. It was very much a case of the glory days had gone, and there was a team very much in transition because
I think then Enzo Berzot, he kind of stayed loyal to a lot of that 82 core.
Perhaps for too long.
A bit like what Marcello Lippi did in 2010. He was a bit too loyal to the 06 team.
And that's what Arrigo Sacchi told us in that interview, which you've written on. Go and see that on destinationculture.com, where he says to us in that phone call that the 94 World Cup side, they gave so much in that World Cup in the heat and you make the final, you nearly win something, and all the emotion, the outpour, it takes it out of you. And then that's why he made so many changes after that for 96. And that was part of his reasoning to us in that call. And it really can take its toll. You have to turn over some players, obviously. You don't want to get rid of the likes of Roberto Baggio, but he never played in Euro 96 after 94. And this is the thing. So there will be a core group that you stick with, and then some players you turn over. Yeah. And I guess that's what...
And he was, Di Gennaro was very good that season for Verona. I think he got 9 or 10 goals.
It was excellent for Verona this season.
And he did score on the opening day against Diego's Napoli. A very good strike, if I remember. And, you know, but I think Serie A had a lot of players like that in the 80s and 90s because there was only two foreigners and then later three foreigners. You had a lot of players of a high quality that were Italian, but they just could never transfer it to the Azzurri.
Yeah. Well, if you ask someone on the street now who's Pietro Fanna, they wouldn't have a clue.
No.
And he played for Italy as well a dozen times, and he was instrumental in winning that Scudetto.
Yeah, I mean, doing my research for the piece, and Emmett was talking about the first game against Napoli, Daniel Bertoni scored for Napoli, and Bertoni was a 1978 World Cup winner, and he's barely an afterthought among the foreigners who played in Serie A. That just shows the quality of the...
Yeah, and the depth of
the players at the time. And I also think, going back to Di Gennaro and players of his caliber, when you have a cap on foreign players, it just doesn't... It doesn't... I think it's too simplistic to say if you have a cap on foreign players, then that means the local players will be better. It's not necessarily true, but the local players are going to be better because there's going to be more of them getting opportunities. Therefore, that means that you have to stand out, get an opportunity in among the local players. I just think, you know, we often are too quick to say, oh, you know, if we put a ban on foreign players, then the local players will be much better. It doesn't necessarily work like that. They're going to be better if they're given opportunities, which obviously they're going to be getting if there is a cap of some kind on foreign players. And I think that's what led to a sort of like this, not maybe not elite players, but this sort of like this tier of players, the likes of Di Gennaro, the likes of Galdarisi, that were excellent. They weren't world-class players by any stretch, but they were more than players that can just do a job, in inverted commas. You know, they were at the top of their game, and in this season, it was just good enough for them.
And I think Italy had a lot of players in that mold in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
They could do a job. Or maybe they'd only be called up if one of the mainstays got injured, but they're still at that level.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we don't see enough of that now because of...
There's not enough players.
Yeah, not enough players.
A lot of them are in Serie B. Come watch us on Destination Calcio Doc.
Yeah. Yeah, but I feel like every side in Serie A of that era had maybe 4 or 5 players like that, you know, that they were versatile. They could play in multiple positions, or they were just really good at their natural position, and Di Gennaro was one of them.
Do you think Catenaccio and Zonomisto helped evolve the Italian national side back then? Because you'd have to be a transitional player. You'd start at the back and obviously you'd work your way up the pitch. The contropiede was a big thing, the counter-attacking. And Catenaccio was one of those systems where, you know, made big in the 60s and 70s and continued through the 80s. And it was only really Sacchi that put an end to it.
Well, so I think there is an element of that in the sense that Verona were probably lucky. Maybe luck is not the right word, but they found the perfect circumstances around it because it was still a transitional phase in terms of the way football was played in Italy. So Catenaccio was still, it was still the defined ideology, but it was no longer the Catenaccio that was applied in the 60s and 70s.
It had morphed slightly.
You would see a lot of teams playing 3-5-2 at the time or a variety of thereof, but it wasn't until, you know, Sacchi came in and sort of redefined the game. And the reason why he came in and redefined the game, as he said several times, is because he felt that Italian football was, you know, ripe for a revolution. And I think that when you have those conditions there, then teams like Verona can succeed because other teams are a bit stagnant tactically, if you wish. So maybe...
Predictable.
Yeah, a bit predictable. So perhaps, you know, adopting something that is a very simple approach, such as Bagnoli's, may pay off anyway because you don't have to, like, reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the milestone moments of that season, I guess, they never scored too many goals, Verona.
No.
But they did have one shootout with Udinese, an 8-goal shootout, 5-3 away win. And that's when we saw Brigel and also Elkay get a brace each, 2 goals each for
them.
They were
3-0 up in that game and Udinese put it back to 3-all. And you're thinking the wheels have completely fallen off here. And it's, you know, Shakespearean drama is.
And they found it. And then champions have to find that extra gear. And that's what they did.
And I guess some point. To going back to the quality, that was Udinese with Zico in it.
Yeah.
Like, what is the modern equivalent today?
Udinese getting Neymar
in
his pomp?
Something like, or Luis Suarez at Sassuolo, or, you know, maybe, but again, it just...
Messi, where would Messi be in the 80s in Serie A? Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo talking about, not R9.
Yeah.
We're talking like, they could end up anywhere. Could have been Avellino. For all we know, Messi at Avellino.
Well, the Pope was at Avellino.
True, Pope's got ties there. All the popes do.
Yeah, but it highlights Zico being at Udinese highlighted just the sheer strength of the league, and that also adds to the sheer brilliance of Verona's season and the fairy tale. The fact that the league was so competitive.
That's the
arguably the most competitive league in the history of the sport.
Yeah,
Serie A of that time.
Yeah,
and for Verona. No, not a big team to win it.
To win it was just two losses. They were both 2-1 losses.
Yeah, that was the point I was trying to make earlier. Because yes, they only played 30 matches. So yes, teams, you know, if you have a lead after, you know, on a 13 match season, it's harder for teams behind you to claw it back because it's obviously like, you know, fewer matches that we have now. But you don't have the luxury of going away to the likes of, you know, with the greatest respect, a Monza these days or even a Venezia. You're going away to Udinese, who may not win the league, but they've got the likes of Zico their team. You know, there are no gimmicks. You go away to the likes of Torino and you face the likes of Walter Schachner, who is a prolific scorer as any year by the time, and Junior. You're going to Florence to play Fiorentina and you've got Socrates standing in your way. I mean, it's incredible. You could argue that Verona were, in names-wise, were probably one of the least talented teams in Serie A at the time.
Yeah, but they found a way to compare it to someone nowadays. I mean, off camera, we discussed this. We couldn't really pinpoint
I think the Leicester is in 2015. Was it 2015?
2016, I think.
Yeah, it's the obvious
King
comparison.
The coaching there.
I'm going to get pelted for this. I don't think that Leicester was a fairy tale at all. Yes, you don't expect this stuff to happen in the Premier League these days, but they didn't exactly build their team on peanuts. They spent a lot of money, which is not money that is...
No Premier League team spends nothing. They all spend massive amounts.
Sure, but what I'm saying is it wasn't just a case of... I mean, it's a great story, of course, but I always found the fact that this sort of description of Leicester is, you know, as a rags to riches story, not necessarily true, because they spent a lot of money. Not the kind of money that the likes of United, Chelsea, Arsenal will spend, but still a lot of money.
You've got to spend money to win, and that doesn't matter if you're getting promoted, if you want to win the first division of any league, you have to spend, you have to invest.
But Leicester are probably the closest. Yeah.
Sampa 91,
yes.
Although they were riddled with stars at the time.
Yeah.
Maybe they were underperforming. Well, they had Sacchi's Milan, they had... Napoli that had won the Scudetto twice.
Yeah.
Inter with the three Germans.
So Juve, to win it, Baggio.
We're talking about Vialli. Yeah. We're talking about
Mancini, Vieckerwood.
Yeah, so it's not a team. I think that it's a stronger side than this Verona.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In comparison, in context, if you want to, you know, deduce and take both.
I think
seasons separately.
Was it Nantes that won League One? Maybe
yes.
95.
Yeah, just out of complete nowhere.
Yeah.
And
also
I think AZ Alkmaar won the league with under Van Gaal. And again, they were unfancied.
Well, do you remember Montpellier when they beat PSG to the league in like 2012? Yeah. This was PSG.
Yeah, 2012. That was them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they've ended up in the second tier for a lot
and
of
I
years
think
since.
Ancelotti was manager of PSG. And Montpellier beat them to the league. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what would come to mind
was
when
that
I'm trying to think of
Gignac up front, or my dream. I know that
it might have been Gignac,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, PSG is the obvious fairy tale we'll think about when you think about teams.
they're rags to no riches at all.
Yeah.
But I'm going to go out on a limb here. You won't agree, maybe, but I think this Napoli side in 2024-25, if they were to win, then that would be a similar... They're not the Napoli side of 2023. And if we go back to even 86-87, yes, they had Maradona. They built their side and they were getting better each year. But were they the favourites to go and win it? No, maybe in 86-87 they were there or thereabouts. They were coming together. Maradona just won the World Cup.
They finished third the status. Year before.
Yeah, then, he was at that level. But, and then they went on to win in 1990. That was, you could predict that. But in 2022-23, having sold Insigne and Mertens and Ospina and all them and Koulibaly and Fabian Ruiz, no one predicted them. Everyone was talking about, are they going to make the top half of the table? They win it, and they win it by a margin. So then you think, well, dynasty's coming. They make a 10th place finish. So that's a difference in coaching. Spalletti leaves.
Yeah. Well, there aren't any dynasty coming up with Rudy Garcia on the bench, I can tell you that.
Exactly, and Mazzarri coming back. So you can see the difference between having Spalletti as a coach with a Napoli side that's got brimming with talent and unknowns, and I guess you could equate that to Verona in some sense. But this one, full of workhorses at the moment under Antonio Conte, that to me is the closest thing in modern day. I'm not talking about Sampdoria 1991. I'm talking about 2020. You know, we're talking about in between 2020 and 2030 here. Where is there a side? Definitely not Inter. Definitely not Milan. They go out and they spend or they attract the biggest names because they've got the wage structure to do it. Napoli doesn't have that. And no one expected Napoli to even really challenge for Champions League. So that to me is the closest we're going to get.
I disagree with that. I can see where you're coming from, but I disagree with that. I'm going to throw a suggestion in. A team that did not win the league.
Has to be a winner to be legit.
Well, no, because I make the rules when it comes to this, so I'll take it to that.
New rules here.
I think the Fiorentina team of 1999 would have been the closest thing to this Verona side. The team that had been knocking there or thereabouts, they have a couple of standout players.
Should we compare that to Torino finishing second in this season in 1985? Because that would be a comparison. You don't win it. You have to compare it to someone that doesn't win.
I said hypothetically it would have been, plus you would have had the Trapattoni-Bagnoli link because they were teammates at AC Milan. That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, I guess Parma finishing second year that Juventus were scrutinised for specific substances after that.
Well, there was, going back to Verona, there was always the accusations that in Serie A since forever, referees were selected for games, and this was the only season that it was a random draw.
Yeah.
And then
there's that
the season after, they went back to officials being picked for certain games.
Who won the league the following season?
Napoli.
No, they didn't.
No, Juventus.
Yes.
Yeah, but that was Platini.
Typical Juventino trying to palm it off onto the smaller clubs.
But that was always they did that for one season, Verona won it.
Yeah.
And then it was regular
before
scheduled program.
Before they got it right again for the big three.
Yeah,
okay.
But Juve never won the league for 9 years after.
This is 86. The side. This is the kid that should have won in 96 as well if it wasn't for Juve, so...
But
let us know in the comments if you agree with
that. In 97, Juve were strong.
You Palmer either love Juventus strong. Or you hate them, I've realised.
Yeah.
And
Emmett
loves them. I don't
know where you stand.
Emmett loves them and we don't support Juventus, so you can make what you want of that. Guys, we will wrap up
But I
soon.
Think that is an idea for another pod. You know, nearly title winners.
We could, the teams that maybe should have won.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The best teams to never win the league.
Turin in 77, Roma in 84.
Parma 99, Parma 97,
yes.
Fiorentina 99.
Yeah.
Napoli 2018. Yeah, that was a shocker when they got pipped by the dynasty of Juventus.
Lost it in a hotel in Florence.
Oh, they did not.
They did.
Is that where they hired Rudy Garcia? I know that was 5 years later.
that was the clairvoyant saying, in 5 years you will hire Garcia and dip to 10th.
Well, is it worth winning a league title if then you have to undergo Rudy Garcia's football? For a season.
Yeah, how did it feel, David?
He's done okay at other clubs. Okay. Maybe he wasn't the right choice at the right time, but who is after Spalletti, you know? And who was after Bagnoli at Verona? It happened to be that point in time that the magic came together.
We should mention, actually, Bagnoli. Obviously, he's famous for Verona, but Bagnoli also oversaw Genoa, probably one of Genoa's most famous nights.
Against Liverpool.
Against Liverpool.
In the UEFA Cup.
Yeah. That was an exhilarating run that came to an end in the semi-finals.
And he went on to coach Inter.
Yeah.
Who beat them in the semi-finals that year?
Ajax, because then Ajax beat Torino.
Yeah, Louis van Gaal's Ajax.
Some of the other clubs that Osvaldo coached, Fano. Massive club, Fano.
Yeah. He had a spell at Inter?
He did, I just said, yeah. That was an echo. That was the frequency.
Was that during the Rubens Sosa days, I want to say? Because when they had those wide bomber jackets with Fiorucci as a sponsor, I want to say.
Dennis Bergkamp was there at Inter at that time? Rubens Sosa.
Bergkamp went to Inter after winning the FA Cup with Ajax.
Yeah.
Going back to Bagnoli here, Cesena, Fano, Rimini, Como, Solbiatese, and Verbania. That's where he also played for Hellas Verona. We should add that fact. Mm-hmm. And also Milan, that's where he started. Catanzaro.
Right there.
That's his former club, Udinese, Spal, and finished at Verbania, then started managing them. So that's his journey, was going out from his playing days, getting his opportunities as an assistant coach at Verbania, and then the only way was up until he wins a Scudetto with Verona. And if you look at his honours as a manager, he's won the Serie B with them as well in 1981-82, as we mentioned, the Serie A in 85. He won Serie C 2, which was Serie D back then, fourth division. Serie C.
Yeah, I never got around. See, it's all topic for debate there, because there's people who maintain that it was still third division.
Highest football league.
Okay, so it was...
Giusto, yeah. Also the Latin Cup, whatever that was, as a player with Milan.
Great trophy.
Making up titles just to hand them around at the time for participation. Also won Serie A with Milan as a player in 1957. So Osvaldo Bagnoli, that is our tribute to you. Mega coach of the 80s and 90s as well.
Question to you both before we wrap this up. Do you think we will ever see a club like a Verona, not a Juve, Napoli, Milan, whatever, but a team of that size from a city of that size win another Scudetto?
What is that size?
Kiev tried it, and then financial impropriety sort of caught up with them.
We're talking about a city of 300,000 inhabitants. What are we looking at? Top?
The closest that is ever going to come to that, if either the likes of Fiorentina or Torino are bought by an investor with incredibly deep pockets. But again, they are not going to exactly be fairy tales, because they've won titles before themselves. Yeah. So their short answer is no.
Like Udinese winning something?
No. Well, to wrap this up, let's go to some of the stats we've got here. And they are the 11th biggest city in Italy, 252,000 people living there. The only other cities around them are Catania, who have more, with nearly 300,000, Bari. We're talking Venice, Messina, Padova, Prato, Florence maybe is within the ballpark. So Fiorentina is probably the best chance there, I'd say. Yeah.
But even then, it would acquire.
But I mean, do we see any of the three of us see Fiorentina winning the league?
Football manager, my friend. I'm sure someone's won it.
No, you don't. But you can, you can't see anybody coming. I mean, you can.
If you can follow the Napoli mold and build and build and build and build until you get to within reaching distance.
Until they're really going to see a bit that is, then just leave that aside.
The Spalletti or the Maurizio Sarri, Napoli, even under Benitez.
But you'll need someone with deep pockets. And I know the Commisso has,
he has deep pockets.
But you need much deeper pockets than that.
Yeah, but he's smart. He's not going to just throw everything at the club and win a title.
But that's the only way a club the size of Fiorentina or Napoli are going to win the league these days now, because the financial gap is...
It's not true. And I'll tell you why. I will debunk that by saying Napoli have built their empire through getting good players, selling them for double what they got, and then buying players at a much smaller price, and they don't just throw money around. They throw money around that they've made and bank the rest.
But Napoli have also been able to sign the likes of, Osimhen for 70 million. And
50 million, I think he was.
70
was
plus.
That deal there is worth a pot in itself. Because there were four other players involved in that deal. But I get
what you're saying.
But they sold Higuain for 90.
Yeah.
They sold Cavani for 65 after getting him for 16. They got Higuain for 37, sold him for 90.
Sold Lavezzi for 30.
Sold Lavezzi for 30. They got Hamsik for 5. They got Lavezzi for 5.
Yeah.
This is the thing. They built their empire on talent, that they evolved them into superstars, then made the money, then reinvested some of the profits, a fraction of the profits, So it's very, very different. De Laurentiis is the model that most people want to follow. Mm. That's my opinion there.
I do think we're unfortunately at Bari, it's not happening. Where, as Dan said, the financial gap is big, but it's not as big in Serie A as it is, say, in the Premier League or La Liga. No. If you're to compete with Barcelona and Real Madrid, you need serious money. I know Atletico kind of do it, whereas the Premier League, you need a lot of money, as we know. So well, Fiorentina technically could do it if they had the right coach and they had the right core players, as you said.
It needs to come together.
But I do think we will never see something like Verona ever again.
Yeah, I think the big three or four have to be weakened. Let's finish off this segment by going back to Dan's article. For 9 magical months in Verona, a city that everyone knows, a romantic city for different reasons. Emmett, why would they be?
Yeah, because of Romeo and Juliet.
Yeah. And they had the right people in the right places, you finish your article with. And it was Shakespeare could not have written this better. And no one else could have. It was only Dan Cancian that could have written this piece. It is labeled the How Verona Shocked Football with a Serie A title win worthy of Shakespeare. And that is available on destinationcultural.com. Go and read it now. And be sure to leave your comments down below.